Evan Roberts. Tiki Barber. It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ah, how are you all doing today? Evan and Tiki here on a Wednesday in New York City. For the New York Met fan out there, we'll get you set for the biggest game of the year, because that's what they're going to play later today. Coming up at exactly 2:45, we get into how and why. What the Mets need to do to make the postseason. That's all coming up. We got a lot of football to discuss as well, including a scheduled Lugash debate series part two. Tommy DeVito versus Daniel Jones. That's coming up later on in the show as well. And we'll get to the Jets to start, but obviously, today is 9/11. I think every year when we wake up on 9/11, I think of the same couple of things. The first thing I think about is how another year has gone by, and there are more and more people walking our city and walking our country who know 9/11 as a historical event. And didn't experience that. And I think that's just a part of being old and a part of life just moving on. But that to me is like, if you are under the age, and we have a lot of young listeners, if you're under the age of 35, it's a historical moment that your parents tell you about. Mm-hmm. And that is very difficult to get through my mind and your mind because we all remember everything about that day. It still makes me shake thinking about that day. And it's been 23 years, and there's a generation of people who think of it as, yeah, it was a horrible day, but I read about it in a textbook.
Yeah, well, for me, and I mean, obviously I was playing, it's one of those days where you never forget, and that's the slogan, it's obviously the mantra that we as Americans espouse at this point, but I'll never forget how I felt that day. Mm. It was the first time in my life where I felt scared, like scared about the country that I lived in. And it wasn't because of anything happening from someone threatening me, but I felt scared for our country, especially after the Pentagon was hit. It felt like everything was coming down. Yes. I don't know if anybody has seen that movie, Red Dawn. Remember that movie? You guys are too young on the other side of the glass. Maybe even, I don't even know if you saw it, Evan, because you're probably too young as well. So I'm almost a decade older than you. It was the Russians invading the United States.
Right.
And like these kids are trying to take up arms and fight the Russians. I mean, it's improbable. But I remember watching that movie and thinking like, man, what would happen if that actually occurred? On 9/11, that's what it felt like.
No doubt.
I felt that emotion. And so the one thing that's been amazing, though, is that especially in New York, and today, and I'm mentioning this specifically because this morning I spent the day down at BCG on Water Street and then at Cantor Fitzgerald raising money for a charity, the Achilles Foundation, which is disabled athletes who are doing all kinds of amazing athletic endeavors, running marathons, triathlons, climbing mountains, whatever a disabled athlete would want to do. Achilles helps facilitate that. John Stewart is one of their ambassadors. We saw him down at the firehouse on our way. And we have turned this morbid day into a celebration of what's so good about this country, and that's giving and facilitating and being great to people. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to go down to BCG and to Cantor and all the money that they've raised for all of the charities. We'll get into it a little bit later because there were some interesting people that I ran into. Lugie, you'll like it. Sean, you'll like it as well. The guys I've met, and I'm looking forward to talking about how good of a day it's been for a lot of charities, thanks to BCG and to Cantor Fitzgerald.
Yeah, so 8 years ago, my son was born on 9/11. It made it a very weird day for that to happen. And as he's gotten older, he's asked me questions about it because he knows this is a day. Yeah. This is a day where we stop and we mourn and we talk. And what I've told him the last couple years when he's asked is, I now think of just the heroes.
Yeah.
And I think of this day is a day in which there were men and women who ran into buildings and only thought about helping others.
Right.
That's what I think about. Like, we lost so many innocent people, we could have lost more.
Right.
There were people who ran into buildings to save others. So it's a tough day. It's a day that makes you realize that when we're about to scream about the Jets and the Mets and the Giants and the Yankees, it's the toy store. It's the fun, as we always say.
Yeah.
It's the candy store. But it's a day, and you said it best. We will never forget. I will never forget. You will never forget. And everybody in our audience will certainly never forget. Now, last night, I couldn't sleep. And you know what happens, Tiki, when I can't sleep?
You get up and you watch wrestling?
Sometimes. I did something pretty productive last night.
Okay.
I did something very helpful. I made a list, okay?
Oh, I made a list,
and it's got two columns on this wonderful list. Column A is Fugazi, and column B, facts, all right? And it involves the New York Jets, who are in last place in the AFC East.
Oh, stop that. It's one game.
They're in last place in the AFC East.
You're giving facts, but they're stupid facts.
Well,
but keep going.
That's just the and also, a team that I was lectured yesterday, maybe not as talented as we all thought. And so I sat there last night because I don't want to overreact to one game. And I also now had 24 hours to let it all marinate. And I wrote down the things that are absolute legitimate concerns. Things that are facts. Things that going into week two against Tennessee and going into week three against New England, it is not hyperbolic to bring up and say, hey, I'm concerned about this. That's the facts column. And then I made the Fugazi column.
Okay.
That's the stuff that, what are we doing here? Are we really worried about that? Like, that's just overreaction of week one stuff. That's, you know, sky is falling stuff. So I made a list of the two things. All right?
Okay.
And you tell me where I'm right and where I'm wrong as a Jet fan as we move closer and closer to Redemption Sunday.
Got it.
Because that's what Sunday needs to be.
So I'm either confirming a check or I'm putting an X.
That's right.
Okay.
Let's start with the facts. I am deeply concerned about this defensive line. I am. Okay? Hassan Reddick, and you talked about this yesterday, isn't going to save stopping the run.
Right.
But he's going to allow a pass rush, something the Jets had none of on Monday night, and something that they actually did get consistently last year without blitzing. And so when I look at the talent on the defensive line, and I remind myself that Michael Clemens is still on this team, and Tack McKinley, and Will McDonald is a first-round pick who needs to prove he's that, and Javon Kinlaw, who I thought stunk on Monday night, and Jalen Holmes, like if I'm being fair, that's the talent on the roster, and that's not that good.
Yes. So when we talked about this yesterday, my point was, yes, it will help a ton once Hassan Reddick is here rushing the passer, but their issue was stopping the run. Right, and that's just good offensive line play, good scheme, pushing around the Jets' defensive fronts on some occasions. It wasn't all the time, but it was a lot of those occasions to the point where a young runner in Jordan Mason, who nobody's heard of, rushed for 140 something yards on Monday night. And so, will he help? Yes, but you still got to figure out how to stop the run. Part of that is defensive scheming, but a lot of it's just effort. It's clogging holes. It's being lane specific. That should absolutely be a concern.
And it is. And I think that is a fair concern coming out of week one that they could not stop the run. They got absolutely no pass rush. And when you look at the talent on the defensive line, I think Joe Douglas may have been a little bit too arrogant. And not just arrogant in terms of the Hassan Reddick situation, but arrogant in terms of letting Bryce Huff go, giving John Franklin Myers away for nothing. Like, I think there was a thought that Robert Saleh and Jeff Ulbrich will be able to scheme their way into this not being an issue. So I don't think it's an overreaction to look at the defensive line and say, you know what, it's not as good as it was last year. I think that's a fact. But let me get to something that I think is fugazi. All right, Breece Hall got shut down on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought overall the offensive line pass protected Aaron Rodgers very, very well.
Fine. Less than a handful of hurries, one sack.
That's it. Now, Rodgers does a great job of getting rid of the football quickly. They didn't open up a lot of holes for Breece Hall, but you know what? This is the first game, the first week of an offensive line that has a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. Yes, they've got injury questions. I get that. But they're all learning how to play together. John Simpson, Tyron Smith, Elijah Vera Tucker has barely played the last 2 years because of the injuries he's dealing with. I am not overly concerned about the offensive line, A, protecting the quarterback, which they did a fine job on Monday, and B, opening up holes for Breece Hall. Fugazi, I tell you.
So I halfway agree with you because I think pass protection is more kind of just your skill. Tyron Smith, very skilled left tackle. He'll be fine. Simpson, same thing. Tippmann, I don't know yet. He's still a young player. AVT, going to be fine. Morgan Moses, he's been here before. Pass protection is fine. But run blocking is so much more of a coordinated dance as opposed to me against whoever the pass rusher is. It's how are we working together to create something clear for the running back to assess and then execute on. And so that may take time. And if next week they get stoned, Breece Hall has 30 yards on 15 carries, you're going to start questioning the run game.
Well, you know what I would do, though, Tink? You know what I mean? I'd respond by throwing the football a little bit more.
Yeah, but
I've got Aaron Rodgers.
But then everybody knows you're really throwing the football.
No,
like,
but everybody
becomes like, you start playing checkers when the defense is playing chess. So if you can't run the football, it makes you so simple. It makes you easy to defend.
But they went the other way on Monday, where they were so hell-bent. And I'm not even ripping this, T, because I understand why. They were so hell-bent on establishing the run that they became predictable the other way, where they were running on first and second down every time.
But they were running on first and second down a lot. But then all of a sudden, when you see a play action, it created so much space.
Yeah, sure.
So you have to do it. You have to. It's just doing it effectively. I worry for the early part of the season because that takes time. Run, offense, line, offensive line play, it just takes time.
It does take time, but don't you think overall they've got the talent there to make this work?
That's why I half agreed with
you. Okay.
Because I think pass protection-wise, and ultimately, they'll figure it out. Morgan Moses is a smart guy. He's a UVA guy, by the way. So, of course, they got to figure it out.
Of course.
Tyron Smith's been playing forever, and AVT was one of the best guards before the injuries took over for the last couple of seasons. They're going to be fine, but I'm only half agreeing with your Fergazi comment because I worry about that run scheming, that run cohesion that only happens with repetitions together.
I'll give you another thing that's Fugazi. The idea that Aaron Rodgers is a 40-year-old quarterback and you've just got to worry about
it. Nah, that's Fugazi.
Look, he is 40, and yes, guys can get hurt.
I give you that.
It's the freaking NFL.
Yeah, that third drive, he was amazing.
He was amazing. And look, obviously, if Aaron Rodgers is running for his dear life, Aaron Rodgers is more likely to get hurt, but the early indications are, A, he's smart enough to get rid of the football quickly, something his predecessor wasn't able to do, and number two, they pass protected very well in week one, which gives me hope that trend is going to continue.
Yes.
That's a nice, easy talking point to say, well, he's 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers. Well, yeah, 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers actually looked pretty damn good when he was out there.
Agreed.
So that is not...
I can't argue with that one.
Because it's a Fugazi concern.
I told you, I wrote you guys. I almost wrote you guys. Aaron's really good. He's just so good.
He's
when
good.
He's on. When he's commanding it and he's putting the ball where he wants it to go, when his release is just... you watch Aaron Rodgers throw the football. When he makes a decision where it's going, the ball gets there.
Oh, zip.
It's there.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's funny. Like, I'm watching the Giants. And that's what Daniel Jones isn't doing.
Mm.
He's not... That decision isn't happening in that microsecond that you have to have it happen in order to, you know, make easy completions. But with Aaron Rodgers, he makes a decision, the ball is gone.
And one thing, thinking back to Monday, that is so incredibly frustrating is that we sat here virtually for a year and a half waiting to see him play.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers was a theory.
Yeah.
We watched the old videos. We remember his time in Green Bay, but he wasn't a New York Jet. You can't even count the four plays last year before he got hurt. And then on Monday night, he's finally out there. He's the quarterback of the team. And a lot of it, not his fault, he just didn't have enough plays.
Yeah.
And we didn't see enough of him. Like, we saw the glimpses of him, and then there were certain things, whether it was the defense not being able to get off the field, whether it was the early drop by Alan Lazard, whether it was the fumble by Breece Hall, there were things that kept us from seeing Aaron Rodgers more.
Yeah.
And we need to see Aaron Rodgers more. But that is not a concern. And to say injuries, look, it's the NFL. Anybody can get hurt. I mean, just look around the league. Everybody's an injury concern. Here's one that's a fact, though. A real legitimate concern. And even though in totality, the New York Jets were not called for a lot of penalties on Monday night, they were called for a couple of big ones. There was an illegal hands to the face called on Jermaine Johnson. It did not have a good game on a third down with the Jets trying to come back down 23-7. It directly led to San Francisco kicking a field goal to go up by 19. Here's why that's a legitimate concern. Robert Saleh coached a really good defense last year, and him and Jeff Ulbrich deserve a lot of credit.
Yep.
And I don't expect him to be completely outcoached every week like we saw Monday against the great Kyle Shanahan. But we have become used to the fact that there is that big penalty on defense that kills this team.
Yeah.
Every single week, there's one. And so when that penalty is called on Jermaine Johnson, and it was legit, I'm not going to whine about the officials. That was a real penalty. It's a reminder that's what this defense even did last year when they played a lot better.
It's like the little things. It's not the ones that are going to get a show up in the highlight reel, but it's the little things that make you lose against good teams.
Yeah.
Those things will crush you against good teams.
And that leads to the other real concern, this head coach. It may not be every single week, but Jet fans, we have bigger goals than just beating the Tennessee Titans and winning 9 or 10 games and making the playoffs. Granted, that's the first goal because you got to make the playoffs. You can't just start running. You got to walk first. But our dream, especially when you have a 40-year-old quarterback, especially when you are having an all-in season where basically you brought in Hassan Reddick and said, go play 1 year, get paid, and then you're gone. Joe Douglas is in a contract year. They've got to win. Making the playoffs is nice. They haven't done it in a long time. They have to win. And what Monday reminded me was while they may be fine on Sunday against Brian Callahan coaching his second game for the Tennessee Titans, and they may be fine against Gerard Mayo 2 weeks later, a guy who's still a rookie head coach. He's only coached one game, two by the time we get to Thursday. I don't trust Robert Saleh against Andy Reid. I don't trust Robert Saleh, and I hate to say it because I don't like him personally, against Sean McDermott, especially on today of all days. I think Sean McDermott's a disgrace, but I'm not going to bring that up again. That's the past, especially today. But I don't trust Robert Saleh coaching against these established big-time coaches, I mean, and I think Monday was a preview of that, Zeke.
So it's a legitimate one because I mean, this is the old Barcells cliche. You are what your record says you are. You are what you've done against the coaches that are quote unquote better than you. And that's what Robert Saleh still has to do. It's a work in progress. But you have to start beating teams and slash coaches that are viewed as better than you. Because that's the only way you become or even start to get in that conversation. Like, you have to win games against in games that you're not supposed to win, or that the pundits will say you're going to be outcoached in. And it's easy to say, it's really hard to do, because so much of it is things that aren't in your control. You know what I mean? As a coach, because you can call the right defense, and the next thing you know, someone busts, and you get a humongous 50-yard play. Is it your fault? You called the right defense. Someone messed it up.
That's what you told me about the Lion game 2 years ago.
Yeah. No.
Called the right play.
Right.
It got busted. They lost.
It got busted. It's exactly right. And so some of it is in his control. A lot of it's not. But the things that matter, the decisions that matter, and the moments that matter, and games that matter, you got to win them. You got to. Otherwise, I think for Coach Saleh, especially if it becomes subpar than what the expectation is this year, he's not going to be here.
What are the real Jet concerns coming out of week one? 888-808-1019. We'll get to the Mets coming up in about 15 minutes. They got a big afternoon up in Toronto against the Blue Jays, Yankees a little bit later on as well. And, of course, your calls 888-808-1019. Aaron Rodgers with a little bit of a threat to Jet fans. We'll play that in a few minutes as well. But coming off a week one loss for both teams, there's that section of you that wants to overreact to everything you saw and think it's the end of the world, or if they actually had won, this is amazing, we're going to win the Super Bowl. But then there's a part of you that says, that's BS.
Right.
That concern is completely overblown. And with 24 hours for the Jets and with 48 hours for the Giants, this is now that chance for you to take a deep breath and know what's the fugazi concerns and what's the real concerns. Mm.
The most important one that's not a real concern is Aaron Rodgers.
That's right.
To be perfectly honest.
That's right.
As long as that one's not real, you don't, or forget Aaron Rodgers, it just quarterback. As long as that's not a real concern, you have a chance in the NFL.
The Aaron Rodgers thing that's, and I sort of explained it before, but I'll give you a dating analogy, is there's this girl, and you've wanted to ask her out forever, right? But you always thought it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And finally, one day, you work up the courage, and you ask her out. Mm-hmm. And you're going out with, you know, this beautiful girl that you've been thinking about for a year and a half. And you go out, you take her on a date, and it's great.
Year and a half?
Yeah, year and a half.
Takes you a year and a half?
Yes, I had no balls.
Dude, Tiki. How scared were you?
Very. Still am. Very scared person.
Good thing you're married.
That's right.
With two kids, don't have to worry.
And you should ask her how long it took me to even kiss her. I was very nervous.
Yeah, you were worried about scoring.
That's right.
The book.
Yeah, well, a little bit. There's some truth to that. So you finally get the date with her, and the date's going incredibly well. And you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this is real. And then, like, before it should end, she goes home. Mm. Now, you know you're getting a second date. She already told you, I had a great time, there's going to be a second date. But the first date left you wanting more.
So unfulfilled.
Kind of, yeah.
And frustrated.
Wow. Yeah, something like that. That's what Aaron Rodgers' debut was. Like, it was fine. He didn't do anything wrong, per se.
but we didn't see enough. And a part of that was his teammates.
Well, really all of it was his teammates. Some on the defensive side,
most on the defensive side.
Early on, it was offense. The Lazard drop and the Breece fumble.
But you know what? I don't want to forgive fumbling, obviously, given my history, but sometimes it just happens when a player I'm serious.
That's fine.
When the defensive player makes an unbelievably great play.
He did make an unbelievably
great play. Fred Warner made a great play. And so you kind of forgive that. The drop also, I got to believe that Alan Lazard is feeling pressure to perform, to be honest with you, because of last year's disappointment. I mean, how many Jet fans just turned on him at the end of last year? Or not even into last year, just last year.
He had a terrible season.
And so, there's pressure. In your first opportunity, you're like, I'm ready. And then, it becomes so in your head that you're not just relaxing and playing. So, again, I'm not forgiving these things because they cost drives, potential scoring drives for the Jets, even though it was early. It matters against good teams.
That's the other thing. You can't make those mistakes, those little mistakes, against a team as talented as San Francisco. Right. And to Lazard's credit, he went on and played a very good game.
Yes, he did.
So despite that early drop, as much as we were all throwing stuff at our TVs and saying cut him immediately, he went on and had a very productive day. Let's kick it off with Peter in Brooklyn. How you doing, Peter?
What's up, Peter?
How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
I'm a Jet fan, and I'm basically on the same page with you guys. I'm not worried about the offense in the sense that Rodgers, this is his first real action for a long, long time. He hasn't had a game speed kind of interactions. I thought he looked a little clunky on some plays, too.
Mm-hmm.
But what worries me is the defense. I mean, they were shredded in every aspect of the game.
Speed camera.
Sorry, I'm in the car.
Yeah, you got a speed camera going on.
I love that you were warned about
it. By the way, I got a speeding ticket in Italy.
What?
From a speed camera.
What?
Yes.
Can I teach you something? Because I've learned this about my foreign affairs. You don't actually have to pay it.
Yeah.
True story.
Really?
So there is a warrant out for my arrest in Canada, so maybe you should pay it. I know you like going back to Italy. So you were driving in Italy and you sped?
Yeah.
And then they sent you a letter?
I speed everywhere. So, it was traffic. Everybody probably got a speeding ticket because everybody's flying over there.
Did you see how above the limit you went?
No, I didn't. Tracy got it, so I don't know what she did with it.
When she got it, was she mad at you? Was she
it
happens.
You got a speeding ticket in Italy. Sorry.
Yeah, but so who sent it to you? The rent-a-car company?
Probably.
So he may have to pay it. The rent-a-car company's got the credit card.
Yes.
Hertz probably sent it to her. I didn't look at who sent it. Because it's just like when you get the camera, the whatever. Because I got one in the city, too. Going up Hudson Street. Because it's a 25-mile zone.
We've all gotten that ticket.
In a school zone. But it was in the summer. There's nobody in school.
Yeah.
But I got the ticket. But they send it to you like it's a parking ticket.
Because
they don't know who's driving.
Right, right.
So they just send it to you like it's a parking ticket. So I think that's kind of what happened.
You were speeding driving on the other side of the road? That is
No.
It's only...
British-controlled places.
Yes. So the European Union, which is London, Wales, and Northern Ireland.
Also, India drives on the other side of the road, too.
Yes.
That's my I've done a lot of research on this,
all
Sean.
All the countries in
because
Europe
because it
did
was
that.
British control.
Yes. It's actually a British thing.
Yes. It's just why France drives on the right side.
That's right.
They wanted to be anti-British.
So what's going on in the Roberts household?
And I told you why they drive on the left side, right?
Yeah, something about Benedict Arnold, right?
No, your sword when you were riding a
that
horse
was, it. Yes,
right, was on your right hip. Usually.
Yes,
most people were right-handed, so if the person approaching you was of ill intent,
right,
you had your sword hand free and on that side.
Yeah, you think about it, it makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense.
It's funny, you going to Europe has been a big conversation in the Roberts household.
Why?
Because, and actually, me and my wife got into a disagreement, is the way I would phrase it.
You almost said fight, but whatever.
No, it's not a fight. It's usually, she's mad at me, and I have to.
Right. So it's not a fight, it's just her yelling.
It was not yelling, but she was disappointed in me, and it involved Tiki Barber. And I'll tell you exactly what it was.
Oh, I do. The wife he wants.
You were the innocent bystander. So, Tiki goes to Europe a lot, as you can hear. He just got a speeding ticket in Italy. We are planning a European vacation.
Woo, woo.
Let me rephrase that. My wife is planning a European vacation.
Is this going to be Chevy Chase-like European vacation?
Well, we'll see. It may be. And so, she's really passionate about it. I'm very excited about it.
but she wants me to help out. You know, like, show that you care. And it's not just about the Mets. Like, show that there's other interests in you besides just sports. And I'm like, you know what? You're right.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tried to help, but she's really carrying the load. So the other day she says, did you ask Tiki about Lake Como? And I said, you know, I completely forgot. Not happy. I know the Mets are in a pennant race, but can you ask your partner about Lake Como? So I very quickly texted Tiki last night.
I know. This was in the car. This must have happened while you were in the car.
That's right.
Because I got it while I was in the car.
That's right. And I said, hey, you got any advice about Lake Como? So here's the point. I'm going to be asking you a lot of European questions.
I like it.
Because I care about the European trip that I'm about to go on.
Nice.
Means a lot to me. I'm very, very excited.
Nice.
Thank you.
And you can do your part.
I am. And you
by
know what
asking
I,
me.
And you know what I also learned? Not to speed in Italy.
If you care enough, you're not going to do a single Rico from that trip?
Oh, I will be doing a Rico from Italy, yes.
Oh, you must not care too much.
No, don't play it. Don't get me in trouble.
No, care means release. No, Hoffman's got those. Come
so
on,
no yeah. Ricos for two
no,
weeks while
no,
I'm in
no Ricos
Europe?
For 2 weeks.
Evan, prioritize stuff over the Mets.
Are you going to Germany?
As of right now, that is not on the itinerary.
If you go to Germany, you can speed.
Is that true? Oh, the Iditarod?
Autobahn.
Iditarod for dog slippery.
Right. I'm sorry. Dogs and pets are on my mind after last night.
The Autobahn.
Oh, the Autobahn.
We don't have to worry about Evan speeding. I've been in the car with him. Yeah, old ladies walk faster.
It's
he's
treacherous.
Not a speeder.
It's treacherous.
By the way.
The Autobahn.
Really? Yeah, so I wouldn't go on that.
I kind of secretly want to be a race car driver, I think.
How fast can you go on the Autobahn?
As fast as you want.
No, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
And now, they pass you. People pass you going as fast as they want.
I go fast. See, where Lugie's not mistaken. I actually do go slowly with him. Mm-hmm. Is when people are in my car, I take a very different approach to the way I drive.
Smart.
So Lugie's not wrong when he says I drive like an old lady. Like, he's not wrong. I'm very, very different when people are in my car. When I'm by myself, I'm a freaking speed demon. But even I would be intimidated by the Autobahn.
Yes, you would.
That would scare me. Let's go to Eric in Rivervale, New Jersey. How you doing, Eric?
What up, Eric?
What's happening, boys? How you doing?
We're doing well.
What's up?
You're good. So, yeah, it's Jets. You guys are hitting a lot of the points, man. The concern for me, and it's not, you know, that game was not a huge concern for me. The Niners are the Niners. They're like a cheat code on paper. I mean, they really are. And Kyle Shanahan, as far as offense, is probably the best offensive mind in all of football. So, you know, take that aside. The Jets' defense is a significant concern as it relates to the run. And I can't figure this out. This is now the third year running where this has been a bit of a bugaboo for the Jets' defense. And I don't know if it's scheme, if it's execution, because obviously we have a tremendous amount of talent, and the cover talent is tremendous. But every running back seems to have a Hall of Fame-type game against the New York Jets' defense. Last year was the same thing. And if we go into Tennessee, who has a formidable offensive line, and Tony Pollard is a decent running back, obviously. I mean, that guy could gash us, and it obviously leads to a time of possession issue as well,
which was the big issue on Monday.
Right, and so it takes the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands, and if this is going to be the playbook against the New York Jets moving forward, what does Salah do? What does Ulrich do to change that? Because I see on defense, I mean, the speed, the talent is there.
Right.
But what I don't understand is why these guys, like, you know, at first point of contact, you know, missing tackles, I don't know. Like, is it conditioning? Right.
I don't think it's conditioning. I think some of these guys just, they got to get used to actual game speed. And again, the first game of the season, you just never know. Like, some teams, it's just going to click. Other teams, it's not. And I think for the Jets, especially defensively, it wasn't clicking. And so I have to wait. I always will wait at least 2, maybe 3 weeks before I pass judgment on what I think a team is, like what their identity is, who they are as a unit, offensively or defensively. Because the first couple of weeks, it's just kind of, like, you're just getting your sea legs back.
Right.
Like, man, I got to actually hit this guy? Sauce Gardner is a perfect example. Debo Samuel is running around crazy trying to make something happen in the backfield. I got to go hit this guy. I'm not just, you know, thudding him and letting him go do whatever he is. I got the tackle. Register that as a tackle. Go ahead and run it out. Like, it's you got to get physical with the guy. And once that happens for the real first time, it hurts.
Yeah, I think the concern stems from this. Like, look, Sauce Gardner missed 9 plays because according to Robert Saleh, he was catching his breath. Whether that's true or not, or that's BS, or they were hiding an injury.
He probably was collecting himself.
Okay.
I doubt he wasn't catching his breath. He was likely collecting himself. Like, I just got jacked up. Mm. I probably got a mini separation from my shoulder. It went out, came back in. It hurts like hell. I'm fine. Got full movement. Everything's good. Otherwise, they wouldn't have let him play. But, man, that hurt.
Yeah.
I got to, like, get myself right.
That's why I'm not concerned about Sauce Gardner. I'm not concerned about DJ Reed. I'm not concerned about the linebackers, assuming C.J. Mosley's going to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
There are aspects of this defense that I feel good about based on track record, but last year, they struggled against the run. That was probably their biggest weakness on defense.
That's the one thing that you could point a negative towards.
Absolutely. And then you look at the talent on this roster, especially on the defensive line, and the lack of, like, that big, big body.
Right.
And there's
no
some concerns.
Dexter Morris there. There's no space eater.
No.
There's no, we got to double team this guy, therefore somebody else is going to be.
They signed the guy from Arizona who's on injured reserve, Fatu, I think is his name, who's kind of fits what I'm describing, but they don't have that right now. And so I think that is a concern. Now, is that the thing that's going to derail their entire season? Not necessarily. Like, this should still be a good defensive team. It needs to be a good defensive team.
Right.
Now, is it going to be as good as we had hoped for? As good as we dreamt about? Maybe not, and that's a problem. Right now, I think what we're starving for, what I'm starving for, is just wins. And that's why I'm not going to overthink by, oh, they beat the Titans, they're not that good. Or, oh, they beat the Patriots, they're not good. They need to win football games.
Yeah.
Because we haven't experienced a lot of that as Jet fans. They've had one winning season in a decade and a half, essentially.
You're talking Leckie Fatu.
Leckie Fatu.
6'5", 335.
He played with Arizona last year.
Yeah, massive.
But he's on injured reserve.
Yeah.
So he's not there. But that's
designated for return. So he'll be back week five.
But that will fit. That's what I'm describing. Yeah. And that's what they're missing so far, early concerns. Kendrick and Suffern. Kendrick.
Hey, guys. I wanted to get in on this after the game, but my Monday call to remind people not to do the superstitions. I held back a little bit. But I love how you opened up the show. First of all, I loved with the speaking about 9/11. As a teacher, a high school teacher, I really appreciate you bringing this up. I actually teach at a high school that I went to. I was a ninth grader for 9/11, so I get to talk to the freshmen and relive it as a teacher on the other side. And it's, you know, every year a conversation that has to be had, and the kids were asking about it. So, Tiki, to your point, it is a good day now to remember and highlight the heroes and all the giving and the good that has come from it. So thanks for the shout out for all the heroes from
no
that
doubt.
Day.
No doubt.
But I did want to talk about the game for Monday and highlight a few things and spin them in a positive way. One, I thought Hackett and Saleh came with the game plan with protecting Rodgers a little bit. And, you know, Saleh had protected Breece Hall. Saleh had Mike Williams on the pitch count. And no one really brought up, I know at the end of the game, Tyrod got some run in there, and it was probably just because why not? But, you know, Rodgers has to build up the endurance a little bit as well.
Right.
And I was curious, like, why they did that. The other thing with your boy Hackett, and no one's brought this up, and Tiki, I know he's your guy.
Right. Love Nate.
But it almost seems like he, again, is just leaning on Rodgers to read the defense, and there's no creativity.
And if I could,
just one last thing.
Go ahead.
You know, McCaffrey went down, and we're talking like the Niners are Super Bowl bound again. My concern is if Rodgers goes down, it's the system that helps the Niners win, obviously the players are talented, but the system is in place no matter who's running the plays.
Right.
And my thing is, you know, Hackett leans on Rodgers so much that God forbid something happens again.
True.
We have no creativity on the offensive side of the ball. And that was alarming to me on Monday.
So it's interesting because it's a very good question. So why you're right, they're protecting Rodgers a little bit by running the football. Because as a previous caller said, Aaron Rodgers hasn't played essentially in 2 years.
Mm.
Right? This is his first action. He didn't play all of last year. Well, he did, but he was banged up in Green Bay. Didn't play all of last year. So it's like a year plus since he's taken snaps. And so, like, you have to figure out how he looks and feels in real action. The challenge, though, is how do you do that without playing him in the preseason? And you do it by establishing the run, getting first downs the easy way, giving him easy throws. To the bigger issue, Kendrick, that you ask about, and this is why is Aaron Rodgers kind of commanding everything at the line of scrimmage? There are a couple of ways to go about this as a coordinator. One, you scheme. That's like Kyle Shanahan. The scheme's going to be good as long as the quarterback can execute it and everybody's on the same page. It's going to work. You're going to have scheme. The other way is to beat the problems. And so when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you let him beat the problems. So you can call a play. Maybe it's schemed great. Maybe it's not. You want him to get the ball in the hands of his wide receivers. And you saw him doing that on that drive where they scored. You could tell he's dummying the count. He's indicating what's going to happen. He adjusts the protection, gets everybody right. He gives a signal to Garrett and the wide receivers and Mike Williams, whoever, and he calls the play. He knows what's coming, gets the ball out quick, positive yardage. So because it's Aaron Rodgers, and he's going to do that anyways.
Yeah.
Even if you have the perfect play called, Aaron Rodgers is going to make it perfect, try to make it more perfect.
He did that in Green Bay.
And it's exactly what he did in Green Bay.
Yeah.
And so the reason him and Hackett work well together is because Nate doesn't have pride in the call. Like, that's my call, run that play. Some coordinators will say that. They are that way. Nate Hackett's not that way. He's, all right, Aaron, I trust you. I love you, trust you. I trust you to get it right. And it takes a certain coordinator to be able to do that with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, BFFs, which is what they are.
Not every coordinator could handle that.
No, because it's like, I don't want to say it's emasculating, yeah, but it kind of is.
Yes.
Because you have such a, that's my call.
Right.
But Aaron Rodgers and Nate Hackett are like BFFs. Right. And so essentially,
it's very tight.
Aaron Rodgers is the offensive coordinator. And that's not a knock on Nate. It's just that Aaron's making that final decision.
Yep.
The New York Mets are about to play their most important game of the season, and I'm deeply concerned. We'll get into why coming up.